But now I'd like you to meet the creator of Cerebus, Dave Sim. He's been writing and drawing the comic for about 5 years. Issue number 50 will be hitting the stand soon, marking Cerebus as the longest-running, most successful Canadian comic book of all time. I wanted to find out all I could about the production of Canadian comics, so I visited Dave at the Kitchener offices of Aardvark Vanaheim Press. Here he is describing his beloved barbarian, Cerebus.
He's 3 feet tall. He's covered in short gray fur. He doesn't really look like an aardvark. The first couple of stories that I did, he had a much longer snout, much shorter ears. Because the snout is a lot shorter now, he's got thicker arms, thicker legs. It's a process that almost all cartoon characters go through. As you draw them more, you drop out things that don't work and you add things that do work. And gradually, it's almost like the character asserts himself. So he's always scowling. Even when he smiles, he's still got a forehead that sort of crouches down over his eyes. Very prepossessing little individual. It's part of being 3 feet tall. If you don't look angry, you tend to get taken advantage of.
Will you describe some of the minor characters and their influences? Because some of them seem to be very closely connected with characters from other comic strips.
Well, some of the more popular characters, the first major one that I introduced was Elrod. And the thing with Elrod is that he's a parody of Elric, who is this very somber albino swordsman who's the last ruler of a dying race. And it's really very morbid material that's written. It's very much intended for 14-year-olds and whatnot who feel very alienated from their environment, nobody understands me, and that sort of thing. But I just decided, well, why don't we take that character, this very grim, somber character, and make him somebody really happy, like a complete idiot and a fool. And I tried to think of a voice for him, and I decided on Foghorn Leghorn from the old Warner Brothers comics, where, you know, he'll come in and say, dum-dum-dee-da-da-da-da-da, doo-da, doo-da. You know, and he's this real bright and bouncy sort of individual, which contrasts well with Cerebus, because he is so grim and he's frowning all the time, and he just can't put a dent in this character. You know, he considers Cerebus a kid in a bunny suit. He doesn't know that Cerebus is an aardvark. Gonna have to take the bunny suit off someday, son. There's that character. There's Lord Julius, who doesn't really qualify as a minor character, since he's the chief executive of one of the foremost city-states in the environment that Cerebus is in. But he's patterned on Groucho Marx. And it seemed like the best way to do parodies of politics, that a character like Groucho Marx gets things done by just not taking anything seriously, and by, you know, if somebody comes to him with a problem, he just says something that's got nothing to do with it, and the person wanders away shaking their head. Often thought maybe Trudeau would be better running the country with that kind of an attitude.
Cerebus is not, although it could be designed for kids, adults seem to pick up the humor more easily. Why do you think then kids buy it?
For the same reason that kids watch old Popeye cartoons or watch Daffy Duck, who is, will say just side comments that don't impede the flow of the humor. But if you sit down and watch them as a 25-year-old, as opposed to when you first watch them, you'll be amazed the number of things that you'll pick up and say, gee, that went right by me when I was 8 years old. So it's a matter of, you have to work it at different levels. I think if there's a major failing of the cartoons today is a lot of them are aiming too low. They're trying to make sure that everybody gets it. They're trying to make sure that there's nothing in there that offends anybody. And they're missing the point that kids like to reach for humor.
Both he and his creator have been through a lot of struggles, and I asked Dave how he got into the business in the first place.
Well, basically the same way most people get started, which is just to submit material to the mainstream companies. I mean, I started when I was 15, just typing comic book scripts for the Justice League or Batman, and I'd send them in, you know, thinking, well, okay, let's see what they say. And first thing that I noticed was they didn't say, well, how many years of high school do you have? What kind of art training do you have? I mean, where did you learn creative writing? Which instantly told me that however long I stayed in school, I was going to be wasting time, because none of that was going to be usable. None of that was going to make a dent as to being creative or not. From there, it was a matter of fan magazines, fanzines as they're called, about comics, would need a drawing of Batman to go with a Batman article, and they'd pay $10 or whatever for the rights to use it. And in my case, I went through a lot of that, figuring that someday I would end up at Marvel or I'd end up at DC, drawing some character and hopefully doing a good version of it. But as I went along, I started saying, well, why should I take their character and do a good version of it? Why not find out what's needed or what isn't being done and do that instead? So the stigma that was attached to it that I saw was basically just that all comic characters never get older, they never change. So in doing my own character, I said, okay, why not do 300 issues of a comic book character that starts out this age, does 85 different things, never stays the same, and ultimately in the final issue dies, and that's it. That was the character's life, and you've just watched it.
One of the things that makes Cerebus unique is that it's not produced by some huge comic book company in New York. It's a homegrown family business run by a woman named Denny Sim.
I thought there weren't many women working in comics.
There may be even fewer reading them. Here's Denny telling us how she got into publishing comics.
I married a comic book artist. My main interest started off that Dave wanted to do a comic book. And I spent the first year or two when we were together watching his frustrations. My interest came mostly out of the fact that I wanted to do something about those frustrations. So it wasn't like I had any ambitions to be a publisher or be a female publisher. It was mostly that I didn't like seeing the fact that he couldn't get what he wanted out of publishers. So the only way to get around it was to do it myself.
Were you brought up on comic books?
No. Had no interest in it when I met Dave. Wanted to be a writer. Had no interest in comics. Was looking for somebody to illustrate stories I was writing when I met Dave. When I met Dave, I thought machines drew comics. And we all learned as we went along.
What's the difference between the production of Cerebus and the production of, say, a comic strip like Superman? I mean, a comic that comes out of the DC or Marvel companies. Do they have bigger problems?
Oh, yeah, and completely different sets of problems. One of the basic ones being that Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, who came up with Superman, don't own it. They don't get anything, any kind of money from anything, any merchandising that comes out of it. I mean, Superman sneakers make money for DC, but they don't make money for Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. It's a very different setup from how we're doing it, where the artist retains copyright ownership. The artist, the way we set it up, gets a percentage of your sales, not a straight page rate.
One of the interesting sidelines to comics is the merchandising, which Denny Sim mentioned. Everywhere you turn in comic or novelty shops, you can find products with Spider-Man or Superman symbols. Aside from a few buttons, posters, and a terrific Cerebus stuffed toy, I haven't noticed too much aardvark memorabilia in stores where comics are marketed. Artist Dave Sim?
You have to be really careful with that. Largely because the potential is there. I mean, we get offers for T-shirts and buttons and, you know, all of that stuff that goes along with it. Because Cerebus is sold to, you know, 15, 18,000 people, those are very particular kind of people. I mean, they're the ones who have gotten sick of E.T., not because it's a bad movie, but because you can't turn around without tripping over them. You end up alienating the people that liked it in the first place. I don't want that to be where I make my money, and I do the book just to keep the interest up. The book is what I do to make money, and if I can think of some interesting little gee-gaw that won't offend everybody who buys the book, yeah, then we'll do it.
One of the problems with not trying to exploit Cerebus for all it's worth is that there's probably someone else out there trying to make money off your idea with or without your permission. A perfect example happened last year when counterfeit copies of Cerebus issue number 1 started popping up in comic book markets throughout North America. They were pretty good fakes, and for a while, comic collectors were parting with large sums for what they thought was the real McCoy. How did they get caught? Denny Sim?
Basically, the whole need for it was created by the fact that Cerebus is a collectible item, that there's only 2,000 of the number ones, and so therefore they have a value of about $250 US, and somebody saw a way to make a quick buck. It was the collectors that got ripped off, and the reason for this is that the United States government looks upon it as, if you are a collector of a collectible item, and you can't tell the difference between a counterfeit one and the real one, it is your fault for not checking it out. And this is what the FBI told us.
How are you going to protect Cerebus so this doesn't happen again? I mean, is it possible that you can stop something like that?
Right now, basically, we're trying to educate our readers. When we did the U.S. tour and when Dave is on the Canadian tour this year in July, we are hoping, by meeting as many of our readers as possible, by bringing counterfeit copies for them to look at as well as originals, that they can learn how to look at a book and tell whether it's the real McCoy or not.
Now, who are these people who collect comics and are willing to fork over $100 for a 5-year-old black and white comic about a barbarian aardvark? Once again, Dave Sim.
It's a separate society. I mean, there's this bunch of people who reads comic books in Milwaukee, and there's this bunch of people that reads comic books in Chicago, and this bunch that reads them in New York. Probably if you wanted to compare it to something, it's like the early days of rock and roll. I mean, when rock and roll was starting, there was, you know, record areas in different stores where you could go and listen to records and buy them, and they had Lawrence Welk and jazz and rhythm and blues and a little section of rock and roll over here. Now you have whole stores that are devoted to rock and roll. Very much the same way that somebody can walk into one of those stores and figure he can sit down with anybody and start talking about Eric Clapton or the Beatles or the Rolling Stones or what's going on with this band and figure he has somebody he can talk to about it. Now you have comic shops where you can sit down and talk to people there and say, you know, well, what do you think about Neil Adams? They go, oh, Neil Adams, he's great. You know, what do you think about Cerebus? Oh, Cerebus is real hot. But you can go next door to the optometrist and say, hey, Neil Adams, and you'll get a lot of funny looks.
I have a few friends like that. They've been collecting comics for years and have always liked Cerebus, but they preferred him in the early days when he was more of a takeoff on Conan and all the other barbarian comic characters. Cerebus seems more civilized now. He's gone into politics, has become prime minister of a whole nation, and hasn't had a good sword fight in 2 years. I asked Harry Kramer, the owner of a comic shop called Now and Then Books in Kitchener, Ontario, whether such a big change has made the comic harder to sell, whether he'd like Dave to make the comic more commercial.
Yeah, that would be nice, but it's all up to Dave to decide what he, you know, is going to do with the book.
You were one of the first distributors of Cerebus. What kind of problems do you run into with a new Canadian comic book hitting the market against things like Batman and Superman and Spider-Man and Archie and stuff like that?
When we first started out, and Dave was coming around, he was going to print a book, and he said, well, do you want to handle it? And I said, oh, I looked at it, and I said, yeah, this looks pretty good, humorous, and yeah, the art may not have been that good, because I always told him he was a terrible artist, he was a better writer, but when we started, it was pretty hard, because trying to get people to accept it. The locals, of course, we said, look, it's done here in town. Oh, sure, we'll buy that. But to get it sold anywhere else, I couldn't find any other distributors or any other stores that really wanted to take it. So we sort of had to just sell it here. And we took it around to some of the conventions in Toronto and tried to sell it that way. And, of course, people started catching on to it. Oh, yeah, and the other nice thing, of course, now they're doing is they're... Now, their book has gotten off the ground really well. They're promoting other books, too. They're doing Journey by Bill Loebs, Neil the Horse by Arn Saba, which is really excellent.
Now, that's a name I'm familiar with. Arn Saba has been on our show several times, and if you've ever heard him talking about comics, you know he's full of strong opinions about what's good and bad in the industry. His comic, Neil the Horse, is being published by the Sims company, Aardvark Vanaheim. Issue number one is on the stands now. I asked him to explain the difference there is between working for one of the big comic companies and working for publisher Denny Sim.
I think one of the differences between what I'm doing or what I'm being allowed to do through Aardvark Vanaheim and what would happen in the States is that the pressure to produce a monthly comic forever and ever would wear me out very quickly. I think that's one of the reasons why American comics are probably so formula and so basically crummy is because what can you possibly do at that pace? I find, maybe this is foolishness to say this, but I think of myself as being very much a Canadian artist, writer, as opposed to being an American. I lived down in the States in Los Angeles for 6 months last year, and I didn't realize until I got there how Canadian I really am. Canadians are just so much less violent and so much more polite, and which sounds really bland, but it really is true. And I think there's really a different sensibility in art that is produced here. If you look at what's being produced, the only Canadian comics being published right now are Aardvark Vanaheim, but, you know, look what's happening. There's me with my characters, Neil the Horse, who certainly doesn't have any muscles. He's got rubber hose for legs, a skinny little rundy horse with a big smile. It doesn't look anything like a horse, really. And there's Dave Sim with his very intellectual look at political intrigue and personal integrity and that kind of thing. And then there's the American comics with, as Ken Ironwood, the comics critic, called it, men in leotards hitting each other in the face. It really shows that there's a difference. That 49th parallel really makes a difference.